Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. Tim Wildman and Ed Vitagliano, your joyful hosts. We're always glad you are with us. We are joined by Steve Jordahl. Steve?
Good afternoon, good night.
Who are on the East Coast?
It's 8 o'clock somewhere.
Yes, it's right. That's right. So you're a California native.
Yes. Well, yeah. Oregon native, but my folks moved to California when I was 2 weeks old. I eventually found them. And moved there as well.
Very funny. But you lived in Colorado for a while. How are you digging this cold weather?
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cold weather is, for me, it's bracing. I just like, it makes me feel more energetic.
Yeah.
I'm okay with cold weather. I mean, for a while, and not like if I had to work outside in it, it would probably be a pain.
Right.
But going from the car to the house, it's not bad.
Everything you just said put me in reverse.
Did it? I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. If they were to survey me, then I would say, how does cold weather affect you? And cold is a relative term, I understand. Mm-hmm. I would say it gives me a bad attitude, affects my body.
Makes you want to do less work.
Makes you
want to do more work, makes you want to do less work.
Right. Eat more, which means put on weight.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's just a lot of negative.
That's like a biological thing, too. I mean, the human body tries to store food naturally.
Like the bear.
Yeah, because it's
sort of
winter.
Sort of like the bear. Yeah. We don't sleep as long as bears do.
Speak for
yourself. Typically. But anyway, I do enjoy, and Colorado would be the same way, and a lot of America would be, as I'm about to describe it. I do enjoy seasonal changes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just the winter part of the seasonal changes I want to last 2 weeks max. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, I do enjoy weather changes. You don't get that everywhere.
Of course,
there's a reason people move to San Diego and South Florida, right?
Because
they don't want seasonal changes. They want the constant 72 to 85 with a little wind blowing.
Yeah.
I could see how a man could get used to that. All right, Steve, what's up, man?
Well, I, from time to time, in fact, it's been every day now for a while, bring you an example or two of the Democrats' candidates in case one of them were to become our president. I want people to know what they're going to be in for.
I reject that.
I don't receive
that.
Your Steve, chance you
I'm
have
charismatic
that.
Right now. I don't receive that.
I reject that.
Go ahead.
I wanted to talk about Elizabeth Warren. This is Elizabeth Warren. She was at a town hall, and a questioner came up and asked her a question about foreign policy. President Warren, you're about to get an insight into President Warren's foreign policy. And cut eight.
What is the greatest concern in terms from a foreign policy standpoint for the United States today? And I'd like to give them choices. You don't have to pick one of these choices. You can pick a different one. But here's the choices I give them. So the greatest threat to the United States today, China, Iran, North Korea, or Russia?
Can I pick a fifth?
You can pick a fifth.
Climate.
Yeah.
Climate.
Now, this is a teacher who asks
students,
yeah, what's the greatest foreign policy threat?
And he gives them China or Iran or North Korea or Russia, all of which are or want to be nuclear powers and have a very large animus towards us and towards Israel, and climate.
And that's what
President Warren's. So her budget and her resources.
Tim is slumped over the desk. In disgust or what? What is that? Just exhaustion?
There are several emotions running through me right now when I hear Elizabeth Warren cite climate. First of all, she dodged the question.
Yes.
Okay. A presidential candidate who is going to be a leader of the free world cannot dodge the question that was asked of her, all right?
Yeah.
Unless she subsequently did answer the question in terms of what player on the world stage should we be most concerned about as a threat to world security or to our freedoms. She didn't answer it. She talked about climate. I just think that's a loser. I think it's a losing issue with a majority of the American people. And yeah, are there 25-30%? I don't know how many, what percentage of Americans who vote are going to agree with her. Maybe, probably not that many. Probably not that many. So it's an uphill climb for the Democrats and Warren, for example, right there, to convince the American people that the climate. Of course, she doesn't. What does that mean? Climate.
Yeah, climate is not a foreign policy.
Issue. Is that what she said? Climate?
Yes,
climate.
It's a foreign policy. So they didn't even say climate.
Doesn't even say climate change.
Yeah,
they've reduced it. They've gone from global warming to climate change, and now we're going to just climate.
Well, now I at least understand the argument people make on the far, far left. To your point, this is who knows? It's a very small percentage that would answer like Senator Elizabeth Warren. But I can understand the argument. They say, well, climate change is going to destroy coastal cities and cause chaos throughout the world, so our foreign policy. I understand that argument, but I don't buy it. I don't buy that, and I certainly think it's gimmicky for a presidential candidate to answer climate for a foreign policy question. That's gimmicky.
When they make these claims, these climate change slash global warmest alarmist, you know, they make these claims and then nobody go back. Nobody goes. Well, nobody. Very very few people go back to see whether it's actually true or not. And you know, I'm not talking long range claims. Remember a couple of years ago when we had a couple of hurricanes hit the coast of the U.S. and then all the headlines were more massive storms on the way. Record break. It was after Katrina. Record. Al Gore was going, you wait. There's going to be hurricanes like you've never seen before. Well, we went like 8 or 10 years without any kind of a major hurricane. And guess what? We're going to have hurricanes as long as the Earth is in existence. As long as storms come off the west coast of Africa and come up through the Caribbean. But anyway, I don't think that's a winning political issue for Elizabeth Warren, if I can just measure it by politics.
I got to feel a little bit sorry for Democrats who are running for president because they have to convince the American people that they're not well off right now. They're constantly saying things like the economy isn't working for the middle class. But you know what? It is, as we heard yesterday from a clip, the income is rising for lower and middle income.
That was Charles Payne yesterday, wasn't it?
That higher than the rich. They have to say that the foreign policy isn't working. Except now we have deals with China and we're getting Iran back in
the
line.
The new NAFTA.
They have to say that the economy is not working and the
illegal immigration is turned around.
Everything is
turned
around.
So you got to go with climate, I guess.
So what they have to do is they have to pick a problem of the future because there's nothing for them to run on right now.
Yeah, if you don't elect me, Elizabeth Warren is saying, boy, are we in trouble when it comes to climate.
And you don't even say climate change anymore, just climate.
That is not going to be a winner.
Okay.
I discovered what kind of person Elizabeth Warren was.
Yes.
When she did that just cringeworthy video. I don't know whether it was when she was announcing that she was running for president or not. I don't remember.
In her kitchen. Yeah.
In her kitchen, and she's talking to... uncomfortably, it looked like, to the camera on her computer. And then she said, you know what? It almost like she said, oh, yeah, I almost forgot. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have a beer.
Right.
All you six-pack Joes out there, I'm one of you.
Right.
She goes off camera. She brings it out. And then she just so self-consciously takes a swig of that beer.
The only thing that would have been better if she tries to twist off the cap and it's one of those things where you have to use a can opener.
No.
It was like a spoof of herself, wasn't it?
A staffer, I guarantee you, staffer had already done that and handed her the beer. And then she just takes a swig and stares at the camera and as if to say, see, I'm one of you.
Right.
Then her husband apparently comes in the kitchen and said, oh, it's my husband. Hi, dear. Would you like to join me and have a beer?
Is that still on the internet?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. It is hilarious. It is. And her husband says,
no. You want some comic relief.
I'm good.
Well, between that and Pete Buttigieg at the dentist. No, Beto O'Rourke at the dentist.
Beto O'Rourke. Oh, yeah.
For president, does the dentist getting our teeth cleaned.
When I saw that Elizabeth Warren video, I said, I know what kind of person this is.
Right.
And She's just,
well,
that's,
I'm
just
telling you, say what you want to about Elizabeth Warren, but if the vote comes down to librarians,
they
will put her over the top because she is one of them.
Librarians, huh? The librarian. You've been saying that right along, the librarian vote. She does look like a librarian.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, my point.
Yeah.
All right, so the librarian speaks on climate.
Climate.
Okay. All right.
All right. We're going from global warming to climate change to climate. Next, going to be asked she's just going to say climb. what's the greatest threat to the world? Climb. Huh?
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Look, let's go out to the seashore right now. I'll show you. It's risen an inch. Wait a minute. A foot. Wait a minute. That's the tide. Okay, never mind. We'll come back in 10 years. This shoreline will be gone. Just like the glaciers were supposed to melt.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. All the polar bears are supposed to be dead.
Yeah. All right, Steve.
All right, I want to go to a study. I want to get back to some, if we have time, to some impeachment stuff. But there's a study.
We have time
I found
for you, Steve.
Thank you.
You just go right ahead, my friend. That's why you're here.
I want to go to a study from a British professor named Stuart Derbyshire and an American professor named John Bachman. Derbyshire is a consultant with the Pro-Choice Forum in the UK and for Planned Parenthood. This is a pro-abortion researcher. The two have found that unborn babies may feel pain as early as 12 weeks. I'll read you the sentence. Overall, the evidence and a balanced reading of the evidence points towards an immediate an unreflexive pain experience mediated by the developing function of the nervous system from as early as 12 weeks.
And this is a pro-abortion researcher?
One of them is. They may both be, but one of them is actually a shill for Planned Parenthood in his spare time.
Well, first of all, I will say this. Kudos. This is a man or a woman?
Man.
Man.
Stuart.
Kudos to this man.
He's identifying as a man.
He is. Kudos to him for putting science before ideology, because this hurts his ideology, his ideological worldview, because this is the kind of thing that might eventually convince more and more Americans to be pro-life once they find out that this blob of tissue that looks exactly like a little baby that's
right.
forming can also feel pain
right.
at 12 weeks. So kudos to this individual for putting science before his ideology. He could have just deep-sixed this research because it was inconvenient, and he didn't. So
the research is published in the British Medical Journal's Journal of Medical Ethics. And so if you want to read deeply, that might be a good place to go.
This is one of my pet peeves, all right? I'm just going to say this.
All right.
Okay? People who are secularists oftentimes will say about us as Christians, you don't like science, why don't you do a little reading every once in a while? You know, that kind of attitude, snarky, you know?
Right, like you're ignorant.
Like you're ignorant. And almost every time I go to a website of a medical journal or a psychological journal to read a study, it's behind a paywall. Now, most of these are getting federal tax dollars to conduct these studies and write up these articles that they put in these journals, and it should be free for everyone to read. That's one of my pet peeves.
All right.
Don't complain, because I'm not paying, and most of them are like $45 if you want to.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they're not cheap. So anyway, that's my pet peeve. Has nothing to do with what you're talking about.
Right.
So on we go.
Steve.
Yes,
sir. Throw a topic at you that that we didn't discuss in our show meeting this morning as we prepared for this program. But and if you don't know enough to comment on it, tell me, what do you know about this virus that's in China that's spreading?
Yeah,
it's
that's
called
a good question.
Not the norovirus. It's called the something virus. I know that it has been lethal in China, and they're very worried about it.
Coronavirus.
I mean, people are dying of it?
People have died in China of this.
Killed at least 17, 400, more than 400 made
are
sick
infected.
By it.
I know that it is one of the most drug-resistant viruses that they've come across in a while. And the centers,
antibiotics don't work, that's what they're saying.
And the Centers for Disease Control is very worried. They are screening people very vigorously coming out of China now and into other countries from China. The first case arrived on the shores, the U.S. shores, this week, and it was from a man who had recently been to China and was starting to show symptoms of.
But there's a certain area of China where this is emanating from.
Right.
It's something to keep an eye on. Now, you know, oftentimes when you have these kinds of things,
the city of Wuhan,
okay,
is where it originated.
It's the media likes to sensationalize it beyond its real threat, I guess I should say. So we'll watch this, and you know, viruses spread. Can spread like crazy.
Very easily.
Remember what happened with, was Ebola? Is that a?
Ebola.
Ebola.
Ebola. Is that a? Is
that's
that
a virus.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Remember that when that was a big scare about 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but it was contained basically to
Sub-Saharan African countries. Although right. I've read somewhere recently that there's another flare-up of it in those countries. But yeah.
Well, Adam Schiff.
Adam Schiff.
He's opening up an investigation to see how President Trump is responsible for this for this virus, and
yeah.
You know, because he's been in these negotiations with China.
Yes,
President Trump has.
It's so happened under his watch.
So it stands to reason that President Trump would want to bring this virus in and then solve the problem, and then be a hero. And Adam Schiff is.
I can't believe you think the Democrats would stoop that low.
You mean to blame Trump for a virus?
Yeah.
They're considering. They got to have something after this impeachment's over. So we're going to go with the Trump's responsible
with the coronavirus,
for the Chinese virus, because he's negotiating with
deal.
The Chinese,
yes.
And he traded our health
for their virus
for money.
Yeah,
for the Trump hotel.
There you go. I can see that.
You see how that works?
I do.
Go ahead, Steve.
Speaking of Adam Schiff, we are finding out some new information about how this whole whistleblower. Ukrainian phone call thing may have originated. This is according to Real Clear Investigations. Now, Real Clear Politics is a website that often tracks like polling, and they're more or less unpartisan, not partisan, but they are finding that there are two staffers that were brought into the Trump administration. They're holdovers from the Trump administration. Their names
Obama administration.
They're former co-workers, and they were Eric Chiamarella and Sean Misko. Now, Eric Chiamarella has been named as the whistleblower in this case. It's not been officially acknowledged.
Yes.
That's the name.
Unofficially official.
That's the name that everybody who's in the know is saying is the whistleblower. Two former co-workers of them overheard them early on in the Trump administration. This is Chiamarella and Sean Misko. And they were discussing how to take out President Trump. And by take out, I mean remove from office. They weren't talking guns and that kind of stuff. So they were co-workers. Well, subsequently, Sean Misko went to work for Adam Schiff. And a little while later, Eric Chiamarella finds something he hears third hand may be wrong with President Trump's Ukraine call. And where does he go? To Adam Schiff. And what they're thinking is that these co-workers said the president's controversial Ukrainian phone call in July 2019 provided the context they and their Democrat allies had been looking for.
So you're saying, Steve, you're saying that this whole Ukrainian phone call thing is not really as big a deal as the Democrats are making it, that it is all part of the ongoing strategy of those in the deep state
to
overturn the results of the 2016 election?
It comes as a shock to Mazie Hirono, as you heard last hour, who doesn't think that they've been thinking about impeachment only for 24 hours or so.
I got a theoretical question here. And it's also a constitutional question. Let's just suppose that the Democrats can keep on initiating these ways to try to take out President Trump politically.
Yeah.
If he's reelected in November, can you retro an impeachment to 16?
You mean nullify the election results from 2020?
Yeah.
No.
You keep this going on.
Yeah. You keep attacking, keep impeaching.
You keep impeaching whatever for new evidence or whatever like that. And he's reelected in 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then you say, well, we're impeaching him for the 2016.
No.
Term. I think they can. Because impeachment is a political thing. There's no statute of limitations on what
I think I'm misunderstanding. You're not talking about nullifying the 2020 results because of something that they're impeaching him from in 2016.
You know what? I ruined this little segment for us here because it was an attempt at a joke.
Oh,
that you usually catch, Ed.
It was hilarious. I'm just going to say it right now.
Well, I was laughing out inside. But it didn't work. It backfired on live radio. And so we're going to move on right
All
now.
All right.
Okay.
Hey,
but Steve fell for it, too.
I was having a constitutional argument.
I'm guessing a lot of our listeners fell for it.
Steve was coming to my defense on my argument. Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
Had nothing to do with the fact that I'm the boss, does it?
Not at all. Okay. Not at all. Appreciate my paycheck.
Go, Steve.
President Trump is going to be appearing at the Wildwoods Convention Center in New Jersey at 7 p.m. on January 28th. This is a small convention center in the district of Representative Jeff Van Drew, who was a Democrat up until the last couple of weeks when he decided not to go along with impeachment. Basically, it got kicked out of his party, changed to the Republicans. President Trump is going to go have one of his rallies for him. The Wildwoods Convention Center, it seats 7,400 people. It's a small town. It's a medium-sized arena.
I'm guessing President Trump might fill that up.
He might, because they have had over 100,000 ticket requests.
In New Jersey.
For the Wildwoods Convention Center rally. 100,000. You think that President Trump is losing steam with the American people? I think Democrats are going to have quite the awakening come November.
Could he win New Jersey?
He can. Well, he's probably
got... That would be a shocker. New Jersey is as blue a state as you can get. But 100,000 people, probably not all necessarily from New Jersey.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people live up there, but still, that proves that he has a lot of.
You know, New Jersey, that whole area right there. You know, you got Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania. You know, all those states,
New England states
within driving range. That's probably when they find out Trump's going to be that close.
Yeah,
2 or 3 hours. You know, I can see where a lot of people would show, but 100,000. That's
you're saying now. Who's saying this now?
This is the people who are organizing the rally.
Okay. They've had 100,000 requests for tickets.
And they say it's probably the most requests that anybody's ever had for a political rally like this, although generally people don't talk about the number of requests. They talk about the number of people they're able
to get in. Well, President Trump is just an unusual political figure, as we all know, and he's able to draw crowds in large part due to his celebrity, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, and he's also a rock star with Republican voters.
Yeah.
So it's he's got a lot of momentum, does the president.
Right.
All right. Steve, thank you, my friend.
My pleasure.
For your contributions. We thank Fred Jackson. Brent Creeley is our producer. We'll thank Brent. And Ed Vitagliano. Thank you, Ed.
My pleasure.
We'll see you back here tomorrow, folks. And I'm not kidding.